Mickey Hart here. You're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Alright, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. It's me and Conan here today for the top of the show. Stevie McDonald isn't around today. Stevie McDonald is going to Monday's show for next Monday because Keane Ward is getting married at the weekend. So congratulations in advance to Keane Ward. So he's going to be gone for a few weeks. But we've Pádraig Joyce coming up on the show today to look ahead to the Connacht final. And we'll talk to Banty McEnany, who's taken on his home county down in Wexford Park at the weekend as well. So it'll be interesting to see how he's going to prepare for that. First, there's one or two things, Conor, we want to run through. And Joe Brawley was on the Sports Joe Live last night. You should look at it. It's on our Facebook page. He was in top form. There's no doubt about that. Very difficult to pin Joe Brawley down on anything. Sometimes I wonder, has Des Cal just lost the will to live and that's why he doesn't pull him up on anything? Or is it just like, there's no point here. Let's just let him fly.
Yeah, it was basically like you would try catching him on something and he would either change the topic or he would just tell you some completely random story about somebody's sister who was an uncle of an old roommate that he used to live with in Belfast, you know. Or I think you were saying it earlier, he would just play it all down. He'd be like, you're taking yourself too seriously, it's only about a football at the end of the day.
Yeah, he'd make you feel like a fool for even pulling him up on it. But the best one ever, and we missed this on Monday because I always read Joe Brawley's piece and Colin Murrough's piece in the Sunday Independent every Sunday, but I didn't read Brawley's this Sunday. And I wish I had, because we could have talked about this on Monday's show, because he's putting the boot into Spillane. Obviously he's on record now for saying they don't really get on too well. He says Pat Spillane's all right if you're into that kind of thing.
His dad said that.
So that's almost like a good hint that maybe there might be. I think personally there's a clash of egos between the two of them, because the two of them want to be the star of the show and Colin O'Rourke just doesn't give a shit. He's just there, you know what I mean? He's not trying to be the star. He's just gives kind of sensible kind of takes on things. But Brawley, anyways, he's trying to hammer Spillane, and he wrote in the Sunday Independent, and when a young man is compared to a dumb, violent animal on national television, how could Jim not be enraged? So, Connor Sketches told me about this on Monday. The two of us were just couldn't stop laughing thinking about this. And Pat Spillane obviously says, you poke the bear, you get a reaction. Yeah. Like, it's obviously an expression, you poke the bear. So Brawley's take on this is, when a young man is compared to a dumb, violent animal on national television. Like this, Joe obviously mentioned this to Joe last night, but he completely bluffed it off. But that is the greatest wind up. Like, I'm surprised the Sunday Independent allow him to print this kind of stuff, because this is not to be taken seriously.
Yeah, and it basically said, sometimes I just like to have a little fun on TV.
Yeah.
And it's very, it's such a contradiction. I think you put it to him last night about Sean Kavanagh. I mean, it's funny that I'm talking about, why would Kerry great Pat Spillane want to get Jamie Connolly suspended? I said about him missing his Kerry tie and blazer. I mean, him talking about Sean Kavanagh, could you say that he was missing his Derry tie and blazer that day? And,
yeah.
You know, but then you asked him about, questioning Sean Kavanagh's manhood, and that was just as bad. And he starts relaying some story about a young Conor McManus sitting on his mammy's knee in Croke Park watching the game and having big dreams. I was like, what are we talking about? And by the time he actually finishes the story, you've lost the will to live then.
Yeah, I've forgotten what I was quizzing him about. Like, I've actually lost the point I was trying to make, and I'm thinking, what is Conor McManus sitting on your knee got to do with anything? Listen, anyways, Joe's great value and he infuriates me, but Joe is a really good man and he's great company and he does some great work as well, you know, obviously with charities around the country as well. So I'm a big fan of Joe's, not always a big fan of his on the Sunday game, I think, like a lot of other people. Manager news here, Conan, we've got good news and we've got bad news. Good news first is Fermanagh County Board have confirmed Pete McGrath is going to remain in charge of the seniors for 2018. Pete McGrath, insatiable appetite for football. I thought he'd brought that Fermanagh team as far as he could. Personally, they reached their peak against Dublin that year, you know, but a good performance, went out of the championship. Seemed to me to be on the slide now, but Pete McGrath, he just loves football so much, he ain't going nowhere.
When you said good news, I thought you were going to say that Derry are getting a new manager.
Well, yeah, we could twist the bad news into good news, depending.
Yeah, but like, it's incredible. Like, how does he have that hunger to keep going in a county like Fermanagh, like, who like have had a really bad year? But maybe he's looking at it. He introduced a lot of new players this year. They seem to be a team in transition. So I suppose he wasn't doing that for no reason. Like, he wasn't doing it for the goodness of his health. If he wanted it just for, you know, one more year, he would have just drained every last ounce he could have out of the old heads and played the same team that played the year before that, and
yeah,
tried to get as close to that as possible. So obviously he is maybe thinking a bit more long term, and maybe he's probably seen enough of the young lads to think we could do something here.
Yeah, I'm not sure they will do anything. Yeah, personally, I think so. they've such a small pool, and they always seem to have players not committing or injured or whatever. But anyways, Mickey Hart also says he wants to stay on. That's not as surprising. Mickey Hart's with a top four team, and he also has a huge GAA man, and he ain't going anywhere soon either, which is I think that's understandable. I think Mickey Hart will wait around until he wins an All-Ireland. Whether that's possible with this team, get close in the next 2 or 3 years, whether he gets over the line or not is the other question. Now, bad news. We're going to start off with bad news that could be good news depending on whether you're from Derry. Damian Barton's gone, Conan. Is this good news or is this bad news? We saw the pictures last year of him down on his knees and with his assistant manager, and the qualifier win over Cavan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And a brilliant win that was. And Derry had an all right run in the qualifiers last year. You know, they've obviously got relegated from Division 2 and haven't done too well in the Championship, so like that spelled the end of him. But it was almost a point at this stage last year where you're going, Demi Barton mightn't be the worst manager in the world.
You know, in fairness to him, he did alright with the team that he had. Like, you know, they lost a lot of players. They did better than expected, especially against Mayo. Now, it wasn't a good season this year because they only beat Waterford and he got relegated from Division 2, and those are the facts. But
yeah,
I think the county wants someone who can galvanise the place. Now, I don't know if that's possible. I don't know if it's ever been possible in Derry, but they want someone who can get the rest of these lads back out again, get everyone playing.
Would Joe Brawley do that?
Joe Brawley? Managing Derry?
Yeah.
Not at all. Absolutely not.
No.
I'd say most people in Derry.
Is he divisive in Derry as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably more so. Well, everybody's divisive in Derry. That's a problem.
It's a divisive county.
But, like, yeah, Jesus, you can't be. Like, no one would respect that. Like,
well, he has a great record with the Dungiven under 10s, isn't that? Yeah, it's St. Bridget's under 10s.
It's all underage teams as well. Like, so I don't think. Yeah, I don't think Joe Brawley coming up would make a difference.
Now, his name's in the head. Okay, give me a figure in Derry football that can rally the troops. Anthony Toehill. It has to be a legend. It has to be someone with that kind of respect in Derry that's going to be able to, you know, get everybody committing, like maybe Mick O'Dwyer did with us in Leash, because we had that problem as well, until a big name that has unbelievable respect and has achieved unbelievable things in the game came in. Then suddenly all the lads that didn't want to commit the odd, everybody came in.
And Toehill's probably a good one, because when you think of Derry, like, people always say, oh, we need someone from outside of Derry who's not sort of bogged down in the politics of it all, like, and they come in with a clean slate for everyone. But Toehill's from Swatra, who'd be neutral enough, I'd say, like, because they haven't competed for a senior championship in a while, like, you know, so it's probably more inoffensive. But Toehill is such a big name that maybe overrides that anyway. Enda Gormley's maybe another one. Like, he did a lot of good work with Glenn Miners. He's involved in, like, the Derry underage setups as well. Like, his name was touted around the time Barton got the job. I mean, Barton getting the job at the time was a bit weird, because he was coming off the back of, didn't do much with Slough Neil, left, then Mickey Moran gets an All-Ireland final, wins 3 championships in a row. Barton, meanwhile, takes over Kilray, almost gets relegated with him. Like, Kilray had been there final in the championship as well, didn't do much for them, and then all of a sudden he got the Derry job. Now, I think the thinking was, he's a man from the 1993 era, get him in and we'll get Tony Scullion in along with him, and that will maybe galvanise everyone. But maybe, unfortunately, what happened was that his management record then spoke more highly than what his playing career did.
Yeah,
I think Toehill's a good one. I didn't even think of Toehill until he said it.
There you go. There you go. You heard it here first. Let's start the campaign. Let's start the campaign. Anthony Toehill for Derry. You'd like to see them getting out of the kind of slump that they're in. Other bad news could be bad news for Pat Flanagan. We don't know what the Offaly public think of it. Pat Flanagan's pretty much been sacked. Damian Barton saw out his 2-year contract, so he's just not being renewed. So there's kind of a difference here. Pat Flanagan negotiated a 2-year extension, so he's only 1 year of that extension done, but Offaly County Board have seen enough. I always think Pat Flanagan is hard done by. Like, I mean, they drew with Westmeath in the first game, they were beaten well, I suppose, in the second game, mid-table in Division 3, and put up a great show against Cavan in the qualifiers at home. Like, Cavan are a Division 1 team this year, Offaly Division 3, and they had it to put it right up to them. You know, well, it didn't put it right up to them, but they were competitive with them. Like, I sometimes wonder where Offaly think that they are. You know, like, I mean, Offaly are a Division 3 team. Absolutely. They're nowhere near Division 2 standard. They're a Division 3 team, and their ambition should be winning a Leinster Championship game and maybe winning a qualifier game or two. So I'd like to see how Pat Flanagan has underachieved. You know, he got them out of Division 4. He's beaten Longford in the Championship in Leinster. Like, if you're going to sack a manager, he has to be grossly underachieving. Like, I've called for Peter Creedon to be sacked.
Yeah.
There's a very good argument to say Peter Creedon is not getting the best out of this Laois football team. They're completely underachieving as a group. Whether that's Laois footballers' fault, whether any manager can save this group of players is another debate. But they're underachieving. Now, are Offaly underachieving under Pat Flanagan? I don't think they are. I think they're at the level that they're at. So I think Pat Flanagan is a little bit hard done by to not be able to at least have the option to see out his hit the last year in his contract.
It's short term thinking, isn't it? It's just like, you know, they're not even looking at what might happen or what he might do in 3 years. It's like, oh, we didn't do much there, get rid of him. Like, there's no real thought process behind it. And looking at something as simple as the clips after the game against Cavan or the pictures and stuff, it looks like he's got a real bond with the players there. Like, you know, a lot of them are coming over and hugging him almost as if they knew this might be his last game, and there seemed to be a real sort of emotion there between the players, and that's a hard thing to find. Like, you always talk about Liam Cairns and the impact he had with Laois, and you see that even now with the Tipperary team. It's just got such a good sort of bond with him and a good feel-good factor, and like, it's rare in a manager. And it looked to me, anyway, from way outside, that this boy actually has a connection with the players. And yeah, you're right. I don't know what they're expecting. If he's got a good bond with them and they're doing all right, why not keep him?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think if you're going to be sacked, there needs to be some serious underachievement going on, and we don't see it there. Quickly before we move on here, tax exemptions. The Minister for Tourism and Sports, Brendan Griffin, said this week, "I'd like to see players being rewarded for what they do and players being able to give more time to their circles. They're elite sports people in an amateur sport." So he's proposing potential tax breaks for GA players. So, like, I mean, Jesus, I'm looking at this and I'm always, anything Gaelic footballers can get for their efforts, I'm always 100% give it to them, you know. But I don't know how this one's going to work. Because, like, I mean, how do the tax exemptions work? Are they the same for Dublin, who win in All-Ireland, as for Leitrim, who might only win two games? Are they still getting the breaks? Like, I mean, you look at the level of performance and commitment some of the top teams give. Don't bullshit me that the teams in Division 3 and 4 are going to every gym session and going, they're posting up a picture and letting on their, you know, the commitment
bring
is not
three different t-shirts.
Yeah, the commitment is not the same across the board. Their contribution to Irish society, which you could obviously argue the whole summer shuts down and Croke Park is full and it's all anyone talks about, but that's not across the board. And that's why the government grants are tiered and they are spread out fairly for how far your team gets. How would the tax break work? You know what I mean? I'm not sure how the tax breaks could potentially tier for a number 27 on a panel whose commitment is questionable. He's on the panel. He's not on the team because he won't commit. He's on the panel because he's good, not putting in a huge effort. Is he getting a tax? Does he deserve a tax break?
Well, that's why I don't think it's viable at all. But like the number 27, I'd say, you know, there's an argument, but there's so many number 27s, you're putting in more effort than
no else. I know it works the other way as well, but I'm just using the example.
That's what I mean. That's why it's too hard to to police. I mean, and then, like, where do you stop? Like, why is it only restricted to these 30 who might be named in the panel, because there might be some other players outside? What about the guy who's playing under 21s, playing with his school, playing hurling club, playing senior club with his football team?
Ah, yeah, but you can't bring it down to club level. Well, or
exactly, but
stop.
But, like, you know, but they're contributing to society as well. They're amateur players in an amateur sport. Some of the quotes that Brendan Griffin was using, I just don't know.
You see, but they're not contributing to the point where, you know, there's 80,000 people watching them. I think that's where the distinction has to be separated from the inter-county game and why they get the grants and why other players don't get the grants. And it comes down to ability. Like, I mean, I can play soccer, but I'm not Premier League standard, so I'm not going to get that. That's, you know what I mean? You have to have the ability to play at the elite level, and then you get that. Like, I mean, commitment is only one thing. Everyone that commits to a sport don't deserve tax break. But that has to be married with the ability to play at the top level. Do you know?
I'm thinking about the club player, though, who...
But no, his ability is obviously a lot less.
Going
to be in the club players.
But
club players for a reason, because they're not as good as the inter-county
but
players.
But if you have a young club player, 19, say... Trying to, maybe he's on the fringes of these panels and he's trying to break in, all of a sudden now you're paying 30 lads a pile of money, well, giving them tax exemptions, they're getting a lot more money, they're well looked after better. It's suddenly a lot harder for this club player who's 19 to break into that county team, because then it's a vicious circle. These guys keep getting the same money, and then all of a sudden there's a gap developing then between this lad trying to break in, but he's not getting the same sort of rewards as the boys already on the panel are. So it gets harder and harder to reach for.
Well, I would say that's an incentive to get up there rather than... I've never heard a man to come up with a conspiracy theory, a negative conspiracy theory, whether it's a rule change. You will find the world's worst ever reason for not doing something. Just on that thing, because Olympians, obviously, they get grants, but theirs are performance related, obviously. So you don't perform for a year or two and your grant is gone. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I mean, how are these tax exemptions going to be linked to performance? And if they're not linked to performance and everyone gets them across the board, I think it's silly, you know, personally. But I'm all for tax exemptions for some sort of help for GAA players. I think the GAA personally should pay them at the end of every year 10%, 15% of gate receipts. That is the fairest way. GAA players are 100% responsible for gate receipts. 100% responsible. No one would go into that stadium if it wasn't for players. Why don't players ask for a percentage of gate receipts? Why don't the GPA look for a percentage of gate receipts? And then everybody's happy. Split that out at the end of the year and pro-rata like the grants. And that seems like such a fair way to give the lads a bit of recognition. And not recognition from the government, recognition from the association that they're bloody making millions and millions and millions for. And I think that would sit an awful lot easier with the players.
The funny thing is, we actually agree here, but we're just making two different arguments. I think so.
Okay, that could probably happen to two of us an awful lot, maybe. We're just we're not realising that we're actually agreeing with each other. But come here, we may leave it there, because Pádraig Joyce is on the line to help us out ahead of the Connacht final at the weekend. Pádraig, you tipped Galway strongly to beat Mayo, so I presume there's nothing other than a Galway win in your sights for Sunday as well.
Yeah, well, look, I tipped Galway the start of the year to win Connacht. I just thought that I felt that it would get over Mayo solely because they've improved from where they were this time 12 months ago. And Roscommon will cause problems to Galway on Sunday, but if Galway show up in the right frame of mind and perform on the day, they'll win the game. But if they don't, they'll struggle against Roscommon, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting enough. I saw some quotes from Kevin Walsh here, and he said, in the last 2 years, this is going to be our fifth provincial championship game in a row against a Division 1 opponent. You know, people don't really have the impression of how difficult Connacht is to win. Now, he's including a Connacht final replay there, so they've played, this will be their third game against Roscommon, and they've had to play Mayo twice. So that Connacht title isn't an easy one to win. Like, Kevin Walsh is even saying Ulster teams wouldn't even have to do that.
Yeah, you know, you'd have to agree with them, because you see stats that don't lie. It is the fifth Division 1 team, as you say. Albeit Roscommon are gone out of Division 1 now, say, but they're still in it until next February or so. But it is, because the people say, oh, sure, Connacht is easy to win, there's only 5 or 6 teams in it, and New York is thrown in there. But look, at the same time, it has to be won, like, you know, you have to go and win it. And Galway have put themselves in a position, they've won it last year after a replay, and in the position to try and do it again this year to get 2 in a row, so... they have a good chance of doing it. The home advantage is with Galway. Roscommon are had a topsy-turvy year where they've lost a lot of players in the panel, all that kind of stuff. But look, that can galvanise teams as well. And Roscommon will come to Galway at the weekend with nothing to lose at the same time. And sometimes 15 fellas going out, if they perform, they'll feel they have a chance. And I think they will cause Galway a lot of problems. I don't think that everyone thinks Galway is going to win it very, very easily. I don't think Galway will win it too easily. I think they'll win it just about, but not a cakewalk like everyone is thinking, you know.
Yeah, well, it's hard to know, you know. It's funny, Connacht is more difficult to win than Ulster, basically, we're saying.
Are you trying to wind me up? I mean, Ulster teams don't start in the semi-final. That's the sort of reality of it as well. I mean, I was looking at stats during the week, and basically Roscommon have beaten Leitrim. That's it so far during the Connacht final, fair play to them. But now they're automatically at least in round 4. Monaghan have won more games than them already, and they're in round 2.
Yeah.
I mean, this imbalance is crazy, and that's the reality of what Ulster teams are facing.
Yeah, don't slip us into a championship structures chat there.
We're structured here on the phone. Yeah.
We could be here all day. Come here, I want to start off by talking about the midfield battle here, Pádraig, because this is something that's just glaringly obvious as a huge advantage for Galway. Like, I mean, Roscommon are weak in that area in my eyes. Galway are very strong in that area. Like, so the kickouts are going to be absolutely huge. And like last year in the Connacht final, I was at the game in Salt Hill. I wasn't at the replay, but Galway were very conservative that day and they didn't actually push up on the Roscommon kickouts. But you'd imagine they have to do that this Sunday and force Roscommon to midfield where they've got the advantage.
You would, like, but if you look at the game last year, I think Niall Daly was playing last year midfield for Roscommon, if my memory serves me right, and he was probably the best midfielder on show, kicked 2 points for Roscommon. But like, the midfield battle is in Galway's favour, provided the two goalkeepers are forced to kick the ball out long. But yeah, the way the game has gone nowadays, a lot of teams concede position, like, and you look at your right cornerback or left cornerback, like, they actually get more positions when kickouts than any other player in the field. Like, even against Mayo, obviously, when you go into Galway in Pearse Stadium, you're going to have the elements there to factor for. Even on a fine day, there's going to be a wind there. So some team is going to be playing against the wind up towards the Salt Hill end, say, on whatever half. And you have to push up. If you're playing with the wind, you have to push up,
yeah,
on the kick out and force the goalkeeper to kick it out long. If that happens, I think Conroy or Corrin and Tom Flynn in the middle of the field should have a serious advantage out there, you know.
Yeah, if you look at the... Sorry, Porrico. If you look, Conan, at the stats coming from the Leitrim game, this is against Leitrim. Roscommon just had 3 marks. Leitrim had 9. So Leitrim dominated midfield. Roscommon are not weak in that area. So you'd imagine it's an incredible weak tactic. Tactically, it'll be weak from Galway if they don't push up. And, you know, if they give Roscommon that handy kick out when they're clearly have a huge advantage in midfield.
Yeah, and last year Galway dominated midfield. And I think you chatted to Kevin McStay afterwards and he was talking about their problems in midfield,
yeah,
and having to just sort of patch up that area. No, like, it's... And, you know, as much as I was whinging about the mark beforehand, like, you know, when a team like Galway are using it, it's completely hard to stop, like, you know. And if they do force Roscommon to go long, like, I don't see how Roscommon can get enough primary ball. They really work themselves into the game.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're being beaten 9-3 on marks against Leitrim, Porrick, you know, Galway is just going to be a step too far, you'd imagine.
Well, you'd imagine if you pump the ball out there. So look, they'll obviously have to try and take the two midfielders to one side of the field, Roscommon, and leave the wing forward come into that position or something. They'll have to try and work something, because I feel if they do, can hit the ball out 50-50, Galway should hoover up ball there all day, the two lads, Conroy and Fintan O'Curran especially. Like, even against Mayo, I felt, where Mayo were very strong midfield, when the ball did come out long a few times, Galway actually won the long kick outs, you know.
Yeah.
And Mayo will be very strong around the middle of the field. And Roscommon, we're hearing, are down to their third and fifth and sixth choice midfielders at this stage. But
they are, yeah.
At the same time, they'll put effort in and they'll put. It's all about getting the bodies around the field there. But, like, you're looking at. You talk about quality of marks there in games. Like, you're only seeing 5 or 6 marks, max. Like six. Leaped them at 9 the last day, which is huge. Like, you're only seeing 5 or 6 on any. And even in the overall of the game, the way it's gone. Because goalkeepers now are trying to drop them out short, and it's all about securing possession. And the other teams are more interested in sitting back and getting their sweeper in place and allowing maybe 5 forwards to mark 6 defenders, 7 defenders, whoever it is, to try and set up to watch them carrying the ball up the field, which is, in my eyes, is probably wrong. I think you should push up man to man, especially if you're playing with the wind, because the ball comes out long, and if you lose it, you still should have plenty of time to get back against the wind to defend your ground.
Yeah, so how do you think Roscommon are going to set up against Galway? They set up very defensively against Galway last year in that Connacht final in Salt Hill. The second, the replay then, they came out of their shell a little bit when Galway got a good start and then they got blown away. So, like, I mean, what do you think Kevin McStay is going to be thinking this time?
Look, he's obviously going to keep the game as tight as he can, possibly for as long as he can, obviously. So, like, they are going to be defensive, there's no doubt about that. But at the same time, Roscommon have good ball players in the Smiths and these guys, the Murtas up front. So they'll try and probably leave 3 or 4 up front, like most teams do, even 2 inside and one at centre half forward, or even 2 there, 1 inside. But like Galway themselves, in the last couple of games, you watch the league games even Galway have played, we seem to set up very defensively ourselves as well. Excuse me. And we ourselves, like, don't actually push up an awful lot. We don't commit a lot of bodies forward. Even the last day against Mayo, we only had Damien Comer up front for a lot of the first half, and until we sent Armstrong inside with him when we won 2 frees in from 2 long balls going in. So Galway and ourselves, we don't actually push up too hard ourselves. Like, so we need to commit a few bodies to attack as well. But if Roscommon, Kevin McStay will definitely come and keep about 8 behind the ball, and keep the two midfielders tight, and he'll have 3 or 4 up front. And he'll try and keep the game tight and pop off his scores. And obviously, I think that with the wind factor in Galway, if Roscommon win the toss and play with the wind and get a lead, that's what Kevin will hope for, and then try and defend that lead in the second half against the wind if he can.
Yeah, and I suppose you know as well as anyone, when it was Roscommon get their tails up, you know, they can be very competitive. I remember back in 1998 with your brilliant team, you needed a replay to beat them. You know, they can be dogged when they get that bit of confidence.
They can, like they can, and what Roscommon have, like, is like they'll always come with great heart and great spirit. Like they will come with that, and like their supporters will demand that, and if the supporters aren't getting the stand, they'll let the players in the field know that they should be getting it. And like they will come with that element of which you would expect in most inter-county teams anyway. It's the Connacht final, they're coming down the road, has come, they've nothing to lose really, and they're going to throw the kitchen sink at Galway, and Galway need to be prepared for it, you know.
Would Roscommon be wise to target that Galway full back line, considering how shaky they looked at the start of the Mayo game, just to even test the waters if early on with a few balls in?
You'd imagine it'd have to be like, I mean, Kevin McStay, we've all heard him speaking on TV for numerous years, and he's been telling other counties how they should be playing and what they should be doing. So he's got the chance now to exploit weaknesses and what he perceived weaknesses he can see for Galway. But sometimes, you know, I think these weaknesses, while you say Galway's full back line is weak, whatever, I thought they actually done quite okay the last day against Mayo for the pressure that they were under for the majority of the game, you know. And everyone will say around the place, oh, why didn't Rochford stick Aidan O'Shea in full forward with Big Kirby and see what happened? But it didn't. He probably should have done it, but it didn't materialise. Whether Max Dade was that now, maybe moving into Smith in there for a big high man, he did it last year for a while, caused a bit of bother. So look, he mightn't, but at the same time, if he does that, I'm sure Kevin Welch have a plan to counteract it, you know.
Yeah, it looks like Roscommon will be leaving Kieran Murta and Dermot Murta maybe inside on their own, and they will cause problems because they're two very good teams. And it looks like Niall Kilroy is kind of a sweeper now. He works back a lot. So Brian Stack works back as well. Most of the other forwards outside of the two Murtas will be doing this work and back kind of thing. But the thing about Roscommon is they don't play the full-time sweeper. Kilroy will be racing back. But like, I mean, I always think, I was watching Laois last weekend, and I think it's so confusing, Pádraig, with these lads. You find a lot of lads, they're running back, they're not back in time, then they find themselves the ball's kicked dead, then they're running back up and they're not up to support the ball in time, and there's a few lads who are caught in this middle ground of trying to chase back and trying like it's madness. Yeah, like
it's madness, yeah, and they wind up then like with about 7 or 8 kilometres on their
and only
about 6 times switching the ball, you know. That's what gets you, like, yeah,
isn't it?
They're not being effective, like, you know, and like even look at Roscommon, like they've called Compton in midfielder with Tiger Roark on Sunday. Like, I mean, like them two boys won't go forward like as such. Definitely Kilroy will go back and cover a bit of ground, like, but like I'd see Roscommon could stick Enda Smith in full forward, try and get the ball into him. Like you have Conor Devaney then, who's very, very, very good at attacking wing back. He scored a couple of goals the last day. Seanie McDermott is a very good ball player. It's very hard to see, like my old school thinking of as a player, like if you're wearing a double digit on your back on the field, you should be a threat towards the goal going forward, not the threat going back the way. And unfortunately, a lot of managers nowadays have their 10s and 12s tracking back the way and covering ground, but then when they get back there, as you say, they don't know who to mark or where to go or what to do.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get an effective sweeper that will play the game like that. As I just say, then he goes back to defend, and then all of a sudden they win possession and they have to get forward, and she was killed out up and down the pitch all day long trying to create attacks and support the defence. And so it's funny where it's going to go, you know.
Yeah, it is. So like, I mean, Conan, you look at this when you see it tactically and you say, right, there's a full time sweeper, right, the kicking game might be, let's be clever about the kicking game, but Roscommon don't really have a full time sweeper. Kilroy will get back and sweep if Galway are slow. So the message then to Galway obviously is kick the bloody ball, get it into Comer early, and pass out these 3 or 4 forwards that are trying to, you know, do this dog's work of getting back yeah, up. So if Galway move the ball really, really fast down the field and they have ball winners in the full forward line, get the bloody thing down there and overtake these fellas retreating.
Yeah, exactly. And Galway are one team that can do it because they do kick the ball and they kick it early. And the idea is, with any team, even if you're talking Donegal in their heyday or Tyrone now, kick it before they can get set up.
Yeah.
Like, you only have a very small window to get at these boys. After that, you're going to be passing around and you're just playing into their hands. But it's funny, I think Pádraig's right. You know, like Donoghue Walsh is a good example of a guy with double digits on. He can do the dirty work, but he's also always a threat still, like, going forward. He's
huge threat, yeah.
Such an important man for Kerry going in the other direction. Like, for me, sweepers are becoming like they're becoming as annoying as defensive midfielders in soccer, where it's like, you know, because they're said to be doing this role, it's like, oh, they're underrated. You don't see what they're doing, but they're doing it. It's like, well, you know, it doesn't give you a license to be ineffective. Like, you know, yeah, like someone like Kevin McKiernan, we were saying he shouldn't be playing sweeper, but he's still having such a big impact on the game defensively and offensively. When you have a good player, that's he still right. should be going both directions.
Connor, that's why your sweeper, you see, as well. Like, whoever your sweeper is going to be, he needs to be an actual ball player that can actually kick the ball and use the ball. Like, a lot of these sweepers come back now to just stand there, cover ground. But it was you, like, if you're a defender and there's a sweeper there, and I know I'm marking columns and I win the ball, I know that if I give it to my sweeper, that he should be able to alleviate out pressure with a kick for 30, 40 yards or use the ball. But nowadays, you see, a lot of sweepers don't. They're just into covering ground, tackling back. And then when they get the ball in, like, first thing they do is just hand pass it to the nearest man to them and run off in looking for a pass up the field somewhere else. Instead of being kicking the ball 30, 40 yards to alleviate the pressure for at least a few minutes if they kick an accurate pass, you know?
Yeah, and if you actually want to bluff as a sweeper, you can totally bluff and pretend you're marking this space. And you, like, I remember the best sweeper I've seen was Mark McHugh when Donegal were going well. And Mark McHugh, the minute he was a sweeper, so immediately he was covering off the side of the field, he thought. But the minute the ball was kicked in, Mark McHugh abandoned his position as sweeper and sprinted as fast as he could over to double up and try and get the turnover. Then someone from midfield dropped back into his sweeper role. That's the perfect scenario for a sweeper as far as I'm concerned, because sometimes if sweeper's there and he's just standing around the middle and it's kicked into the corner, he just kind of stays standing around the middle, you know, and he's never doubling up or creating that turnover. He's just always marking space, and it's like a holiday.
Even in Mark McHugh's time, column, like when he did do his defensive stuff, but as soon as the defensive was done, like, he was gone.
As
an overlap down the far side, you know. But Donegal then had someone else to slip back in while he was gone for a few minutes. Like,
yeah.
So it's grand having a sweeper system, but you have to have the whole system. But look at it, let's go back to the old adage, like, if you're attacking, go back to the old style things, like we had with Galway, like, back in 98, like, and that's going back a long, long, long time, maybe 19 years, like. If somebody was attacking down the right-hand side of our defence where Declan Meehan was playing, Sean O'Dupuyer was playing number 7, he had to be our sweeper. He had to be the guy covering across the middle where the danger was. And same if the attack was going down the right-hand side of the pitch, your left half-back came in and covered that way, like, and then your wing forward came back a little bit. So there's no need, I don't think, for people to be sitting back there all the time. Like.
Yeah, you can
that's
do.
That's the way we done it. And that's a long time ago, but we obviously had the rule in Galway where you had your defenders that you had to have a man within 10 yards of you, in front of you, if you look at your body head north, south, east and west, you had to have two men beside you within 10 yards, either front and behind or left and right or somewhere, like.
Right.
To cover up proper space, like. And that's the way it is worked, like. Should be worked.
Yeah, no, that makes an awful lot of sense. Parag, if Galway were to take the step up, which I think they can, to be a top tier team, I think they're close enough now, do they have to maybe get a little bit more offensive? Do they have to leave a few more forwards up there? We see Kerry doing it. We see Dublin doing it. You know, they've always leaving four forwards, maybe. Even Kerry were looking at times last week that they were almost leaving five or six forwards up there as much as possible. But they, like we said on Monday, they were dominating midfield. Do you think Galway need to just maybe to take that step, maybe to use their forwards a little bit more?
Look at the do, and they have to improve on two aspects, really. Like this defensive game we're trying to get in, it's not fully fine-tuned yet. We thought we had it the Offaly County final last year, but then Tipperary ripped it apart above in Croke Park, and then the last day against Mayo, we didn't do enough going forward. Like, you go back to 1996, I know you're not a big Man United supporter, Colin, but Eric Cantona went to Alex Ferguson and said to him, he said, unless we stop leaking goals, he says, we're not going to win no championships. And he went and spent £10.75 million on Yap Stam as a centre half. In that year, United won the double, the league and the FA Cup, and they won, I think it was 11 games 1-0, where Cantona scored probably 7 or 8 of the goals in that game. Like, so while it's already been offensive, you have to get your defensive structure in place first, and concede and stop conceding goals and soft goals. Like if you concede 1-12, 1-13 nowadays, like, you're going to be in trouble. Like, so you're trying to limit the magic number of 10, 12 points. Like, you should score more than that to win the games. But Galway need to kind of, one thing we're doing is, like, we have 11 from the team that played the Connacht final replay last year starting this year, so, like, we have a fair amount of consistency in the teams that we're picking, even from the league all the way through. So it's the same players just playing the same roles, we're getting to understand them a lot better. For us to go forward, like we have Michael Daly up front, we have Shaney Walsh, Jamie Cormer, Sean Armstrong has a slight knock for Sunday, he'll be back hopefully if Galway get over Sunday. Eamon Brannigan, these are all good forward players, like, so we need to get the ball into them as quick as we can, and I think these guys will flourish once they get to Croke Park and will attack a bit more. Then you have Gary O'Donnell and Garrett Bradshaw supporting the attack up the field, But to answer your question, we need to improve in all aspects of the game to make the step up. And for us, we definitely, first of all, can't look past Sunday and try and get over Sunday. And then when we do, or if we do get to an Ireland quarter-final, that is the big test for us, is to beat a team in Croke Park and get us to a semi-final. And then we'll know where we're at.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But I think Kevin Walsh, like, I mean, obviously Kevin Walsh played on your brilliant Galway team, and his tradition isn't defensive football, but he is gone a little bit conservative. And I tell you how conservative, just an example of it is Johnny Heaney played wing back as an attacking wing back the whole way through the league. And I was thinking here on the show, right, geez, he's going to give an extra dynamic then to Galway going forward. And O'Donnell scoring and Bradshaw scoring, I was thinking, you know, this is looking pretty offensive here, or maybe it's a new thing. Then you play against Mayo and Silk is brought in, who's a natural defender, into the half-back run, and Heaney's moved back to his wing forward position. Do you know that kind of way? And it's just a little small thing.
But I think that was more tactical, Colin, because of who we're playing that day with Mayo. So yeah. Because like, their half-back line is Colin Boyle, Liam Keegan and Patrick Durkin. Like, they're huge attackers. Like,
yeah.
Johnny Heaney plays his club football in midfield and is a very effective player like for them. Like, he's a ball player, Johnny. Like, he can be, and I mean, the modern game, like, he can play around the half back line, half forward line. There's no big difference. That's the difference in the modern game, like, between 10 and 12 or 5 and 7. There's no huge difference in where you are playing nowadays, because everyone just moves and covers ground and covers the ball. But I know you're coming from, like, but in our time with Kevin, when Kevin played midfield, it was like he was our orchestrator. Like, he always kept a tight ship at the back himself and Tomás Mannion. He'd organise Tomás Mannion centre back lads to come back. He was always roaring at Tommy Joyce playing 15 to come out and cover the ground. Same with Michael Donlan.
Really?
Like, Kevin knows. Yeah, he was. Like, he was brilliant on the field. He was a brilliant player, like, obviously. And he was a very, very good organiser as well, like, you know. But, like, he knew where lads had to be and to cover ground here and there, like, you know. And, like, obviously, when we were up front with Kevin, like, Kevin could kick the ball into you, no problem, but he was also great at creating space for you as well, you know.
Right, OK, so he was always a thinker on the field, so it's not a big surprise that he's a good manager.
He was huge. Like, he was, look, he was definitely, after 98 or 2000, whenever he finished, like, you knew he was going to be the one player that would go on and become management, you know.
Yeah, OK, what do you think, Conan?
I think what he's doing is justified. I mean, if I think they will win the Connacht title this Sunday, so they're going into quarterfinals with serious momentum. They won that FDB back in January. They won Division 2. You know, they're coming in having won all these things. They won Connacht last year.
And they beat a good Kildare team, which has proved themselves to be a good team in that League 2 final.
And these boys, now I know they won't take any quarterfinal for granted now, but, like, you know, they'd fancy themselves if Mayo get through, which they probably will. Galway can't play Mayo in the quarterfinals. Well, it looks like they'll be playing Donegal, Meath or Down, somebody like that, in the quarterfinal. You know, now I know they got Tipperary last year, so they won't be looking too far ahead. But, like, all the momentum is with Galway. They're winning. It looks like they've all bought into what Kevin Walsh is doing. They've got a bit of a swagger about them. And, yeah, like, I know they do commit a lot of bodies back, but they don't play a slow game. It's not laboured. When they get the ball, it is kick, kick, kick. It's great to watch. Like, and they do get the most out of Damien Comer still. Maybe, like, they have an odd man inside at all times, but they're still getting the most out of what they have, I think.
Yeah, no, they do. They are a good team to watch. Pádraig, we'll leave it the last word with you. What's your prediction? You won't be here for our predictions at the end.
I'd say Galway to win the game, but just about 2 to 3 points. I think Galway probably have the better organisation. They're probably a bit more developed than this current Roscommon bunch. And as I say, the momentum's with Galway. They've come out of Division 2 into Division 1. They're reigning Connacht champions, and definitely we have the players. If we can just show up and apply the right attitude, Galway will win the game 3 or 4 points.
Brilliant stuff, Pádraig. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No bother.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great. There was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty. I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, backing club and county.
Delighted to say Seamus McEnany is on the line now to look ahead of to the qualifier game against Monaghan at the weekend. Banty, it was almost inevitable you were going to draw Monaghan.
Yeah, well, a lot of people thought that, and when I took the job in Wexford, it was something I never envisaged, because Wexford was in Division 4, Monaghan won the top 4 or 5 teams in Division 1. I never thought we would cross swords, especially this early on. Maybe if we were up the leagues a bit, we may have met, but I wasn't expecting it so early on.
Yeah, where did you listen to the draw?
I listened to it in my bed on Monday morning, and I almost fell out of it. And I almost got sick in the bed when it took me about 2 hours to get my head around having to go through the following 2 weeks.
Jesus, that's a picture. That's I have a picture in my head there now that I want to get out.
I'd remove it fairly quick if I was you, Colin.
Come here. You've played Monaghan before, Banty, when you were with Meath in the league.
Yeah, we played them in the National Football League in 2012 in Navan when I was managing Meath. And listen, it was probably slightly different at the time. I was only after leaving the Monaghan job, and probably not on the terms I would have liked to have left it at the time. But listen, you go on from that, and times move on, and that's 6 years ago since I was Monaghan manager. But listen, possibly the biggest scenario at the moment would be that there's probably 12 players on the Monaghan panel that I would have managed in 2010. And listen, I have the height of respect for all those players, and I would like to think they would respect me as well. And I'd be as professionally as I possibly can be. My job at the moment is managing Wexford. My job at the moment is to get the maximum out of the management team and the players in Wexford. And you know what? If we were told last October that we'd get promoted from Division 3 and we'd be playing Championship football in the middle of July, we'd have grabbed it with both hands.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. So what are the challenges then facing your own county, Banty? It's obviously an emotional challenge because from a tactical point of view, you should know them very, very well.
Yeah, listen, it's easy to say from a tactical point of view, I know them really well. I know them. There's nobody knows them better than I do. But the reality was, I never put in my frame of my mind, I never thought about how you would beat Monaghan, or I never thought of how I would ever want to beat them. So, you know, tactically wise, it's a brand new game. It's a great place for Wexford to find themselves, you know, in this qualifier match. You want to be playing the Monaghans of this world. This is a great place for Wexford to find themselves in the middle of July. Like, you know, to be playing football for a team that's coming out of Division 4, still playing Championship football, and there is not too many Division 4 teams left in it, it's a great place for us to find ourselves.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt about that. Come here, I want to talk to you about Conor McManus, because I saw some quotes about you or from you during this week where you said I would class him as the best forward in the country, and there's an awful lot of people that would agree with you on that. You will get the credit for converting him from a wing back to full forward.
Yeah, well, listen, when Conor McManus came in to me, he came in to me as a 19-year-old young fella in 2007. Would have felt a right bit of conditioning to be done. Listen, he's a brilliant player. He came into me actually in 2007. I played him at wing forward. He came on a sub at wing forward and also semi-final. I actually played him in 2009. Sorry, going back to 2007. He actually didn't make the minor panel of 24 in 2006.
Go away.
And I took him in 2007, and he developed really well. And in 2009, I was actually chatting Adrian Flynn the other night at training, and we played Wexford in 2009 in the National Football League. And, you know, he remember going down on the bus thinking, Conor McManus playing left half back, this is a new young fella, this is not so bad, this is going to be a handy enough day at the races for me. And lo and behold, he said it was the toughest day he ever had in his life. Conor McManus scored 5 points on that day from left half back. And if you can remember, you know, this was part of the defensive systems was coming into place, and I was trying to find a way around it in 2009, and the way around it for me was to have two wing backs, that could come up the field and score, and Conor McManus was one of them to break down the opposition. And listen, in 2009, if you can remember back, we topped the National Football League in Division 2 and we promoted to Division 1 and stayed in 2010. So listen, go back to Conor McManus. He, not alone is he the best forward in Ireland, he's one of the most modest best forwards in Ireland. He's a brilliant young fella. I manage them. They don't come any better.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. So there, like, I mean, how to stop him is the big thing. But now they've also got McCarron in there, who can add, gives them that extra dimension as well. So the one sweeper standing in front of McManus that might kind of curtail him has to worry about two now.
Yeah, and I think I believe that this is the possibly the best panel of players that Monaghan has had in a long time. You know, to have now Jack McCarron as another forward, have now Conor McCarthy and Owen Duffy. And all four lads are very, very good forwards and very good at scoring. So, you know, listen, they're not, no longer are they a one-man band. And, you know, going back to Tommy Freeman, you know, until Tommy retired, he was seen as the one-man band in Monaghan. And then Conor McManus was seen as the next one-man band. But I think that they're very, very strong in that area at the moment.
Can you talk to us about the Carlow game then? We'll go back to then, Banty. That was a huge shock for most people around the country. You know, were you kind of caught on the hop that day?
Absolutely not, Colm. Absolutely not. It may be a shock to people in the country. Why would it be a shock to people in the country if you read into it? Here's two teams, played Division 4 for the previous 2 years. Carlow beat Wexford by 10 points in the last game in the National Football League, albeit we played six or seven of our first team. But Carlow finished in third place, 1 point behind Wexford in the National Football League. There was always only going to be 1 or 2 points in it.
Yeah.
And Carlow sets up defensively. They're one of the most defensive teams in the country, and they're right, because they need to get a sense of where they are and how they can play. They've been coached by a Northern coach. I 100% knew going in that game, if we could get out of here with 1 point or 2 point win or even a draw and get the replay in Wexford Park, I've said this 4 or 5 times before that game, I would have been delighted. But and we were 1 point. The only disappointing part of that was we were 1 point down with 10 minutes to go, and we had 5 opportunities to equalise or go in front, and we didn't take it. That was the biggest disappointment. And only that, this, I understood that we were always going to be in the first round of the qualifiers, because the winners that was playing Dublin. So there's where our training regime went to. There's where everything that I planned for was for the first round of the qualifiers.
All right. Well, that's interesting. So you were just back in the qualifiers earlier than you thought, because it was a good layoff then, Banty. Was it difficult to try and keep the motivation going after the loss to Carlow, and you're back in the qualifiers that little bit earlier? I know myself from being back in the qualifiers after a championship loss, sure, the first week or two are nearly a write-off, but until you try and get lads regrouping back in together and, you know, get them, build them back up again.
Well, we actually weren't back in earlier. We were back in the same time as Carlow, if you know what I mean. We were back in the first round.
A longer wait yeah.
Yes, correct. A longer wait. And 100%, Colin, you have nailed that there. Had we been playing in the qualifiers 2 weeks after the Carlow match, we wouldn't have won the match. No way we would have won it. We only come good 4 days before we played Limerick. I could see us getting better by the week, by the training session, and I knew 100% of my heart the Tuesday before we played Limerick that we would win the game.
Right, okay. That was a pretty close
one. Qualifiers are difficult. I am, well, unlucky or lucky, I have a lot of experience in the qualifiers, and most of them good experiences. Going back to 2008, Monaghan, we were dumped out of the first round of the Ulster Championship, and you know, it was such a devastating blow to us. We were beaten by Fermanagh in Enniskillen, and we end up in All-Ireland qualifying. It's a journey you love getting on. No better place than being in the qualifiers in the month of July.
Yeah. Just on that gap from the championship to qualifiers, because you hear a lot of counties is trying to keep the whole squad together. Some lads might say, "Oh, we're out of the Leinster Championship. Let's go to America." Is that a challenge when you have that 4 or 5 week gap between being out of the championship and the qualifiers?
Yeah, listen, it's possibly a challenge for some managers. This is a box I ticked when I met every player individually last October. You know, I only wanted players that was going to commit for the full season. And This is why I have great respect for the Wexford players, and I've said this on the radio a couple of times, that they are as good a group of players as I have ever managed. Their attitude, their application, their commitment, all those things. The Tuesday night, so we took a week out after Carlo beat us. The Tuesday night we're back training. I had every single player in my panel back training that Tuesday night. And I think that's great credit to them. You know, listen, you have to be realistic about this from a Wexford point of view, or from most teams in Leinster. Dublin are that far ahead of the rest. You've got to think of it as a championship in a whole. You've got to think of the three competitions, the National Football League, the Leinster Championship, and the All-Ireland Series. And we take them one series at a time. So that's, listen, I may be fortunate, but every single player in Wexford committed back in.
Yeah, you're lucky enough in that regard.
And I would say this, Colin, and I mean this in the best sense of the word, and someday you might come back to me and repeat this statement to me, but it's the manager's responsibility to get the best players in whatever county you're managing to get them to the pitch, whether that's a kick in the ass or an arm around their shoulder or one-to-one meetings. It's the manager's responsibility to get the best players playing, and thankfully to date I have achieved that.
Yeah, and that's a challenge. Me and Conan were just talking at the top of the show about Derry, and they're like nearly the poster boy county of people not committing, and Leash are the same as well. So that is a huge commitment of the manager. Come here, Banty. I want to get your thoughts on this. And this is just a silly hindsight argument that I read, or one or two people saying, and it's not my opinion, but I want to throw it to you, that the Carlo loss happened because you got promoted so early in the league, and then you experimented, and that affected your league final performance, and then that affected the Carlo performance. What would you say to that?
Well, first of all, the league final performance is disappointing. I would say hand on heart that Westmead were a country mile ahead of every team in Division 4. They should never have been in it. They were a country mile ahead of it. They were 10 points a better team. They were 7 or 8 points a better team before we went into the game. I would say it had absolutely zero influence within our group, for the Carlo game. You must take this into consideration that we scored the first 3 points of the game against Carlo. We were 7 apiece playing against the Breeze at half time against Carlo. We were a pint down after losing our 3 midfielders. Our midfielder that is our captain and our leader and our go-to man, Dahi Waters, Colm Keogh, and then we lost on a second yellow card, O'Nolan. I would think what happened on the day had more of an influence. 100%, hand on heart, no way had it any influence on that defeat.
Yeah. Look, people say this: if you beat Carlo, it was great that you rested lads and experimented. If you lose, then they'll say that you know you shouldn't have done it. It's hindsight stuff that nobody's really right. You know, I think
when you know yourself inside. And I would be honest enough to say if it had an influence, I know in my heart 100%. What happened in the Carlo match was simple. Dahi Waters got black carded. Should never have got black carded. Scandalous decision. O'Nolan got a double yellow card. An absolute scandalous decision. And this is the point. You know, I watched Monaghan and Down the following week. And what was black cards and yellow cards and red cards with us wasn't even a kicking offence.
Yeah.
So the problem is inconsistency. And I ain't going there, or we'll be here for the evening, Colin.
No, we definitely would. Come here, you're not working with the biggest squad in the whole of the country, but you've changed your goalkeeper since the championship. Roach, who's obviously really good on the kickouts, he used to be a forward. You've switched Brian Malone and Joey Wadding. You've put Adrian Flynn wing forward instead of wing back. So you've just kind of tinkered around with a couple of things that you already have.
Yeah, listen, and thankfully I've introduced a couple of really good young players into the panel, and they're motoring well for me at the moment. Listen, my point is about experience. You know, the Adrian Flynn and the Brian Malones of this world and Daddy Ward, you can't buy experience. And I would have an attitude is if you're good enough, you're young enough, and, you know, you only replace these type of boys when you have something better to replace them with. And I think the lads, I've been very honest with them, and I think they appreciate the honesty, and we play whoever's in form coming up to a game gets playing.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Come here, what's your plan for Saturday night then? Have you decided? Are you going to head back to Monaghan, win, lose or draw?
I go back to Monaghan, win, lose, or draw, and I'm just here on the positive side of life. We're just absolutely delighted to be playing championship football in the middle of July. We'll put the best performance we possibly can together, and we'll give it the best shot possible and see where that takes us.
Okay, brilliant, Banty. Thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck.
All right, Colin. No bother.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Moyle's here for bots.
We thought, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Kieran.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners from Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
All right, predictions time, Conan. We have a load of games to get through. We've obviously got the Connacht final, then we have round 2B qualifiers, and we have round 3A qualifiers. So we'll start off with the Connacht final. Pádraic Joyce, who is the Galway Connacht expert, has gone for a Galway win. What do you think here? Galway are 4-9 in the bookies, and they're -3. They're -3 in the handicap.
-3? Yeah, I'd be all over that. Like,
yeah,
I can't see Roscommon. I can't see them denting Galway enough. Like, again, it's completely different trajectories. I don't know. I don't see any hope for Roscommon. I think Galway will win comfortably, 4 or 5 points. -3 sounds good to me.
I'd have to agree with you. -3 sounds good to me. I think Roscommon will be spirited. I think Roscommon are weaker than last year. I think Galway are stronger than last year. For that reason, you know, you'd have to be fancying Galway strongly in this one. But like what Pádraic said, Roscommon are a dogged type of team when they get their tails up. Like, if there was a strong wind, Roscommon took the wind in the first half and went 4 or 5 up. Bloody packed that defence full of bodies, and suddenly Galway were under pressure. You know what I mean? There's dynamics that could happen out west, especially in Salt Hill with the wind, that we can say here now our opinion could completely change, you know, after the toss. You know, that kind of way.
And in fairness to Roscommon, we're only judging them because they've just played Leitrim, so we're like, we don't know what they're like yet.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a long time from the end of the league, so they've probably had a nice enough build up to this. They took care of Leitrim pretty easily. Maybe we're being too unfair on them, but I just can't see past Galway.
Yeah, no, me neither. I can't see past Galway either. Right, well, let's have a look at the qualifiers, round 2B. Westmead versus Armagh. I'm making a prediction that this is going to be the game of the weekend.
Ooh.
And I'll tell you why. Armagh play a lovely brand of football, lovely attacking style of football. They got back to themselves against Fermanagh. When you see the stats of scoring 20 points along with a rake of wides and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Then you have Westmead, who are a really attacking team too, who went out against Dublin and got embarrassed. But throughout the league, when playing teams of their own level, Westmead have been going all out to go for them. They've got some great scoring forwards as well when they're at teams of their own level. So I think this is a clash of two teams that are in Division 3 next year, evenly matched. Two teams with very good scoring forward lines. Two teams that are going to go out and play the game like pretty much, you know, traditional, but not obviously, you know, it's the modern game, so there's going to be like players dropping back, but there'll be no probably full-time sweepers here, although Westmead could with that Armagh full forward line. But you get what I'm saying.
I do think
this is going to be a high scoring game, and if I go to a game at the weekend, it could well be Westmead Armagh, just to get a look at it.
We were talking to Pádraic about sweepers and that. Like, Westmeath, I know they tried to play a bit more attacking against Dublin, but they seem to have two lads that were dropping back, but they're dropping back too late, and then they were too late going forward.
The old too late syndrome, yeah. Conan. Let's highlight this too late syndrome. Forget about it.
In the middle of the pitch.
Full time sweepers, or forget about your sweepers. That's the way I look at it.
Exactly, or even just wait until the ball comes back down and then go with the play back up the field. But they were sort of stuck in the middle doing nothing. You know, Stevie will tell you all about the Armagh forwards. It'd be interesting to see who can manage John Hesson, because Keane O'Sullivan was struggling with him against Dublin.
Yeah.
I don't think they played it to him enough, and they brought him out to field then too soon.
Armagh play Charlie Vernon there too, and that is, you could see Heslin going to town on Vernon, and you could see Kieran Martin going to town. Although, no, Kieran Martin won't go to town on, who's there, that Armagh dogged cornerback, Ushi McConville's cousin. I can't think of his name anyways, it's neither here nor there. But you can't see Martin going to town on him anyways. I'll get his name before the end. Right, Wexford Monaghan. Monaghan are in the bookies. Oh, wait there, let's get tips on Westmead and Armagh first. Westmeath are 9-4 outsiders. Armagh are 1-2, which, geez, Westmeath are a great price there as far as I'm concerned. The handicap is +2. So, like, I personally, I would be going for Westmeath at that price.
As a betting man, yes.
As a betting man, but, yeah.
You know, I have too much respect for the predictions slot that we've got here going here, so I'm going to go with Armagh.
No, well, I think a surprise there could be on the cards with Westmeath. I don't think Armagh have convinced me yet with a home win against Fermanagh. You know, I think that it's such a 50-50 game that the value is there for Westmeath. So we're disagreeing on this one. You'll go Armagh, yeah. I'll go Westmeath. Wexford-Monaghan, I think we'll both be agreed on this. Wexford are +6. It's even hard with the handicap to know. It's really Monaghan versus the handicap for me, because I fancy Monaghan to get back onto winning ways. I think Wexford might beat that handicap, just at home, and the whole Banty factor, and, you know, I think they'll keep the score down under 6. I don't think Monaghan are going to destroy them.
I think Wexford will beat it as well. I mean, this is Monaghan's first outing in the qualifiers. Like, you're always a little bit shaky going at, look at Donegal last week against,
and the Longford result last year. Sir, Monaghan have issued, well, that was after a Munster or an Ulster final, you know, in fairness. Now, I suppose, considering Monaghan's aspirations, that semi-final loss might have knocked more out of him.
The Monaghan one last year, I think, was after a semi-final as well, because remember, it was Tyrone Donegal in the Ulster final.
Oh, you're right, it was a semi-final, yeah.
And Longford certainly didn't get to the quarter-finals. They would have been playing then at number 9-4 if it was after the Ulster. But it's the old cliche, but it is just about getting through. You're going away to Wexford. They just need to keep their championship going in all week, 2 weeks, you know, take it from there and then start building. They just need to get through this match. I think they will, but I don't think they'll do it by 6 points.
Okay, great stuff. Carlo versus Leitrim. The odds here are Carlo are 4-9 favourites and Leitrim are 5-2. Home advantage, Carlo's good performance in the championship so far would swing it in Carlo's favour for me. I wouldn't be going near the handicap here. I would just be going for Carlo for a win.
Brendan Murphy suspended. It was a big loss for Carlo.
Well, that's true as well, yeah. He is.
Although I saw, like, some of the Leitrim fans are bemoaning the loss of Donal Wren, a fullback. He's like, you know, Broderick might be licking his lips there, but Wren's injured. So Leitrim seem to have a couple of boys that aren't there. Like, their fans sometimes seem to agree on the team and that. I'm going to go with Carlo. They just have too much about them. Like, you know, haven't seen them against Dublin, haven't seen them against Wexford. They've won 2 games already. Like, you know, this team's got a lot of confidence now, more confidence than they've ever had. They're going for, like, when was the last time Carlo would have won 3 matches in the championship?
A long time ago,
A lot of running power. Yeah, I'm going to go with Carlo.
Okay, me too. I already went for Carlo. Right, Cavan Tipperary for the last of the round 2B games. Cavan here are strong favourites. They're 1-2, and Tipperary are outsiders at 9-4. Isn't it funny how the difference a year make? I know Quinlivan is out injured, but Tipperary, who were in an All-Ireland semi-final last year, who should have beat Cork only a late goal, are suddenly 2-1, over 2-1 outsiders to beat Cavan. You know, I don't think, again, the odds are making me go for, even though I fancy Cavan, the odds are making me say Chase Tipperary are great value there at that price.
I fancy Tipperary. I'm going to, like, even without Quinlivan, I think without him the last day, Sweeney still scored 1-4 from play against Cork. You know, Conor Sweeney won't mind who's playing and who's there with him. Like, he'll still rack up the scores. He destroyed Derry last year. Quinlivan was quiet enough in that game.
Yeah.
It was all Conor Sweeney in round 4. I'm going to go with Tipia. Like, Cavan conceded 16 against Offaly. I think only 2 were from frees, so 14 from play against Offaly. They're not going well. 2 Division 2 teams now as well, you know.
Yeah, do you know what, you've convinced me. I'll go Tipperary again, especially at that price. I think it's an insulting to Tipperary to put them over 2-1 to play Cavan in the championship after the year they had last year, and they are a good solid team right throughout. So yeah, definitely I think I'll chance Tipperary in that one as well. So who have we left? We have Meath and Donegal. Meath at home against Donegal. Do you know what, I'm going to pull a rabbit out of the hat here and I'm going to go for Meath in this one. I think they're 2-1 outsiders. Jeez, we'd have a right accumulator if we were going for all these tips. Do you know, I just think Donegal away in Navan, I think it's a complete kind of, you know, it's a strange place for Donegal to go. They won't have gone to Navan very often. It's going to be a game of chess. Longford got so close to Donegal, I still don't think their confidence is 100%. And I think Meath are the type of team to kind of crash any sort of a party. I think Meath at home, they're great value, definitely at 2-1.
I'm going with Donegal based on the fact that Meath were crap against Kildare. They didn't look great against Sligo. I think Longford probably a tougher task than Sligo in the championship. And yeah. I think Donegal the better team. I'm going with Donegal.
Yeah, okay. I think Donegal are the better team. I just think it's going to be so close. I think home advantage might get Meath over the line. Clare versus Mayo is an interesting one. Clare 4-1 outsiders. Clare going very well. Mayo aren't going brilliantly. The handicap here is +5, and that'll be even money. I think Clare +5 might be the bet of the weekend here.
Looking at Mayo in the last 2 years, I think their results haven't justified how good they are. They let themselves be dragged down by Derry, by Westmeath, by Fermanagh. I think it'll probably happen again, but they'll always do enough just to beat these teams because they ultimately are better than them. So yeah, I'm going to go with Mayo against Clare.
Yeah, you go Mayo, but would you take Clare with the 5-point head start?
Probably.
Yeah, I'm fancy Mayo to win that game, but I don't fancy them to hammer Clare. I think Clare +5 is a great bet at even money. Yeah, so that's it. That's all the tips that we have for the week. We'll be back on Monday. Like I said, Stevie McDonald is going to stand in for Keane Ward on Monday, and I'm going to the Connacht final on Sunday, and I'll probably go to a qualifier on Saturday as well. Most likely Westmeath and Armagh, because it's going to be the game of the weekend. You heard it here first. We'll talk to you on Monday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.